Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. A few things for your good-to-know file. What do you make of this? Students at a Catholic girls' school in Rochester, New York, protested outside Our Lady of Mercy School for Young Women last week after graffiti, including the N-word, was found on a bathroom wall. And here's what was written on the bathroom wall. This school is filled with a bunch of N-word. Get out or else. And the graffiti artist did not write the N-word. He wrote the N-word. The person, he or she, wrote the N-word. Well, everyone's in an uproar. Everybody is angry. A local radio host reported a couple days ago that four sources, including two in government, have confirmed that this graffiti, again, it says this school is filled with a bunch of N-word, get out or else. Well, it's been confirmed that it was written by a black student. Our Lady of Mercy School for Young Women has concluded, through investigation into racist graffiti incident that was brought to our attention early Monday morning, the investigation, this is a statement from the school, the investigation was led by the Brighton Police Department with full cooperation of Mercy administration and faculty. During the investigative process, one of our students confessed to writing the graffiti in the girls' bathroom. For legal reasons and in accordance with Mercy's confidentiality practices, the student will not be identified. Mercy has zero tolerance for this kind of behavior. Appropriate and maximum disciplinary action has been taken. If you disobey the rules, you get cut off, basically. I wonder if that's what this means. I wonder if the student who confessed to doing this, who according to reports, saying even law enforcement, according to this report, says that this is the case, it wasn't a white student who wrote this, it was a black student. So the reason I bring this to your attention is because we live in a time now, as you know, where you know how it is. We're just extremely sensitive to blatant racism. That would certainly qualify as blatant racism. And racism is wrong regardless of who perpetrates it. We should always oppose it. We should always withstand it. But what do you do when it's a hoax? What do you do? How do you react when, as in the case of that Smollett guy, Jussie Smollett, he's in jail now for like the next 100-some-odd days because he faked an alleged hate crime, a racist hate crime. And also, to boot, and no, I'm not Canadian, to boot, adding in the quote-unquote homophobia angle where he claims that he was accosted by MAGA hat wearing white guys who put a noose around his neck and told him that this is MAGA country or whatever they said, allegedly. They didn't say it because they weren't there. This guy, this was a hoax. And he wanted to blame white people. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of blame to go around. There's certainly plenty of things that white people have done that are deserving of condemnation. I don't mean to suggest otherwise, but in cases like this, where you've got a fake hate crime, which is perpetrated by somebody who, for whatever reasons, why did this black student, assuming that this report is accurate, why did this black student feel the need to write that kind of racial hatred on the wall of the bathroom? I'm assuming it's because she wanted the white kids to get in trouble. So this happens with disconcerting frequency. I see it far more often than I ever bring it to your attention. But I'm bringing this to your attention in part because it was at a Catholic school. And one wonders, you know, what? How do you handle that? How do you? Will they just sort of back away from it? Will they indeed do what they promised to do and use maximum penalties? I assume that means that you get expelled from the school. Imagine trying to explain that to somebody. Why did you get expelled from the high school that you were at? Well, I wrote a racist graffiti about black people. And you're black? Doesn't make sense. So I wanted you to know about it, because not everything that glitters is gold, and not every time you hear that somebody did something racist is it necessarily true.
I'm a reasonable guy, but I've just experienced some very unreasonable things.
Yeah, kind of like that. Where's that from, Cyrus? What movie is that?
That one is Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah. Kurt Russell.
Probably a movie that'd never be made today.
No, probably not. That's true. Oh, I almost forgot. Libs of TikTok to the rescue. Keck School at USC. This is like USC. They have an announcement. Please, and I'm looking at it. Please view the attachment regarding an upcoming free event organized by the Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences Department and the Center for Black Cultural and Student Affairs. There will be a conference on April 1st for students who identify as black men at USC to talk about wellness and foster community and solidarity. Please see the registration link below and attach flyers for more details. Okay. Students who identify as black men. Now, what's interesting is the word men is in there. See, Cyrus, that tells you what you need to know. The word men means women who identify as men.
But right. Does
this, yeah. But does it also include, because it's not made clear here, does this mean that anybody of any ethnic background who identifies as black can seek wellness, fostering community, and solidarity with other people who identify as black? But it's black men. So if you identify as a black woman, even if you're a man, help me out here, Cyrus. So if you're a woman,
you are on
and you
your
identify
own.
As a man, even if you identify, let me think. So if you're a woman and you identify as a man, and you identify as a black man, you're in, you're accepted.
You know, okay. I just want to say, shut up.
I have those same thoughts from time to time when I read stuff like this. It's also confusing. I thought that was racial. I thought it was ethnic and racial appropriation. I thought that was wrong according to the new rules. You can. Okay, let's walk through this. You can say if you're a man that you are actually a woman and everybody has to go along with that. But I thought the rules were that if you were, say, white, for example, that you couldn't say that you were black because that would be racial appropriation. What am I missing, Cyrus? This is also confusing.
I can't wrap my head around it.
So if, well, let's take Melanie, for example. And Melanie doesn't go to USC.
Oh, she'll like this.
So if she identified as a black, oh, she's not a student. Okay, that won't work for her. But if she were a student.
She could identify as one.
If she, there you go. See, you don't even have to be a student as long as you identify as a student. So could guys just like, could hobos off the street, do you think, Cyrus, they could just show up? Could a white hobo show up and say, well, I identify as a student at USC. I'm not, you know, I don't pay any tuition or anything like that. I haven't taken a class, but I identify as a student. Do you think that would be sufficient for the person to get into this event?
Well,
to find solidarity?
They could show up, but I don't know if they're going to get in.
I would love to see somebody test it. So if they're willing to accept somebody who's not a man identifying as a man, and furthermore, not black identifying as a black man, and that's okay, because then you can find solidarity and wellness. If you're a hobo off the street and you identify as both those things and you identify as a student of USC, even though you're not a student, maybe you could get a degree, Cyrus. Think of the possibilities. Maybe you could get why not get a master's degree? They grant PhDs at USC. Why not get your doctorate there? because you identify as a PhD student. What's stopping you besides your 9-to-5 job? Cyrus is...
I don't have answers for you, Pat.
You have a whole new way of looking at life now.
I'm so confused.
If you want to be even more confused before we go to the phones, check this out. Russia is in chaos right now. Russians are buying up McDonald's Big Macs and chicken nuggets and packets of sauce and dipping sauce and all that, and they're selling them online. So if you wanted to buy a single Big Mac on Avito, which is a popular Russian auction platform, it's like eBay, you can buy a McDonald's Big Mac on eBay right now, Cyrus, for $44. 5,000 rubles is what it amounts to. But $44. You can get two classic McDonald's cheeseburgers for about $88 or 10,000 rubles.
That's a steal.
Could you imagine? By the way, there's pictures, if you look at this article, long lines at stores and drive-thru locations as fast food-loving Russians attempt to get one last McDonald's meal before Vladimir Putin shuts it all down. One picture on Reddit shows a Russian's refrigerator stocked with dozens of McDonald's cheeseburgers.
Has everybody gone nuts around here?
I think so. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Timothy in Bangor, Maine. Good morning, Timothy.
Hey, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you.
Hey,
welcome.
Patrick, love your show. I usually listen to you at night, but I'm out on the golf course walking, and I said, I'm going to give him a call.
Oh,
I have a question about
when
Jesus descended to hell. I'm sure he knew he was going there, and were his last words on the cross, it is finished?
Mm-hmm. Are you asking me that question? Yes, when Jesus, just before he died, we're told that he cried out in a loud voice and said, it is finished.
Right. Now, did the Mother Mary, did they know he was descending to hell?
I don't know, because Scripture doesn't tell us exactly what our Lord had revealed to the Blessed Virgin Mary. We can only speculate. But he did say to the revolutionary, to the other man who was being executed, the man on his right, the good thief, as we call him, he said, today you will be with me in paradise. I imagine that Our Lady might have heard him say that, and she might have pondered what that might mean. Maybe she didn't hear him say that, but we don't know. We're not told whether or not she knew.
Right. Because they said, like, the third day he rose again. And my question was, did Jesus know he was going there, or did the Father just send him there? And what did he actually do there?
Okay, that's a very good question. So did Jesus know? Yes, Jesus certainly knew in his divine nature. He knows everything. There's nothing he doesn't know. Anything that can be known, he knows, because he's God. Now, in his human nature, his human mind, there are two realities to take into account. One would be that from the moment of his conception, Jesus had infused knowledge. And infused knowledge is a direct revelation of God about whatever the knowledge is about. And Jesus had that infused knowledge from the moment of his conception. But he also had, and this is where it becomes more mysterious for us, he also has, because he's eternally both God and man, in the incarnation, he took to himself a perfect human nature, which includes a human will, a human mind, human body, all those attributes that are proper to humanity. He has them in his humanity. And so in his human knowledge, Jesus had to grow in that knowledge. He had to learn how to walk. He had to learn how to speak. He had to learn how to help his dad in the carpenter's shop and all the other things that children learn how to do gradually. He had to learn those things. But even though that was happening, as is proper to human beings, he also simultaneously had the infused knowledge that was given to him by his divinity, and then, of course, his divine knowledge. Now, these are matters that are difficult for us to even try to imagine, but they're still true. So in the case of, did Jesus know this? He certainly knew this, and he told the good thief. He says, I'm going to paradise, and you're going with me. And what did he do there? Well, he went to the underworld, Sheol in Hebrew, or Hades, as we would say it from the Greek. And that is what he described in Luke 16 when he talked about Lazarus and the rich man. And as you read that chapter, you see that in this incident, Lazarus goes to a place of tranquility and peace with Abraham and the good souls from the Old Testament. The rich man goes to a place of fiery torment. And when he's trying to get some assistance, some help, can you send him over here with some water to cool my tongue? Abraham tells him, no, there's a great gulf, a great chasm that's fixed between where you are and where we are. You can't come to this side and we can't come to your side. They were all in the underworld. So when Jesus descended into hell, he did not go to the hell of the damned. He did not go to hell as we typically think of it, where the devil is. He went to the underworld. And the word hell in this context, as we say it in the Creed, it's an archaic version of the English word that doesn't connote the idea of the hell of the damned. It connotes the place where the good and righteous who are waiting in the underworld for Jesus to come and get them were. And that's where he went. And that was also known as paradise, the paradise of the fathers, where there was no suffering other than the suffering of loss. They were yearning to be in heaven with God, but they couldn't be there yet. So when Jesus died on the cross, he went there and he preached the gospel to them, as St. Peter says in 2 Peter, and he took them with him, all of them, from Adam and Eve forward, whoever was destined to go to heaven. He took all of them with him, opened the gates of heaven, and brought them all into heaven with him. And then on Easter Sunday morning, he rose from the dead. What a glorious thing to contemplate, don't you think?
He never really saw Satan like face to face.
Oh, of course he did. He was tempted by Satan in the desert before he began his public ministry. He was harassed in his human existence since the time of the incarnation. Yeah, he was harassed by the devil all the time. But if your question is, did he go to the hell of the damned and stand there amidst the flames looking at the devil and the devil looking at him? No, that's not what it refers to.
Yeah, I was always confused about that. I said, why would a sinless man have to even go to hell, you know?
He didn't. He didn't have to, and he didn't. So the word hell does not mean what we typically mean by hell when we say it in the Creed. It means the underworld where the good were waiting to go to heaven. That's where he went. I'm glad I could be of service, Timothy. Thank you. And thanks for listening so faithfully to the show. I do appreciate that very much. My number is 888-914-9149. Plenty more ahead right after this, including your phone calls. 888-914-9149. Do you think walking 10,000 steps a day is going to help you live longer? I've got some information from science that you'll find very interesting right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Thanks for listening. My number is 888-914-9149. Real quick, if you have an iPhone, and maybe this is true for Android phones for all I know, I'm an iPhone guy, but you've got the Steps app, which will tell you how many steps you've taken in any given day. And it seems like the gold standard is at least 10,000 steps a day, but the New York Post has got an article here about some new studies that show that you don't even need to get that many. So here's what it says. The popular myth that one must walk at least 5 miles to achieve any health benefits is flawed, according to this new study. It's research from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and it found that by getting between 6,000 and 8,000 steps each day, that's enough for you to stay healthy.
Come on!
The study concluded that taking these strides reduces the risk of early death for people who are 60 or older, and it reduces it by 54%. I like that. Walking more than 8,000 steps per day doesn't actually add any benefits, according to the study. The research team looked over, they did a meta study where they looked at over 15 studies and they crunched all the numbers and they saw how walking affects your mortality. And they considered a total group of about 50,000 people from across four continents. The author of the study said, what we saw was this incremental reduction in risk as steps increase until it levels off, and the leveling occurred at different step values for older versus younger adults. Interestingly, the research found no definitive association with walking speed beyond the total number of steps per day.
Wow!
The study revealed that the 10,000 steps a day figure was not based on any scientific fact. It was originally used in a 1964 Japanese ad campaign to sell pedometers to measure how many steps you take. Of course, your phone can do that now. In the study, the team splits adults into four separate groups based on their average daily steps. The lowest step group had around 3,500 steps, while the second averaged about 5,800 steps. The third walked around 7,800 steps, and the fourth group about 10,900 steps or 1,100 steps. Once the researchers sorted out the participants by age, they found that the risk of premature death for the over 60 group plateaued between 6,000 and 8,000 steps, and there was no benefit beyond that. It's not to say don't walk more, just that you don't have to. If you want the health benefits, you don't necessarily have to go that many steps in order to achieve what you're looking for. People who were younger than 60 were perceived to have the risk of an early death decrease at 8,000 steps. The survey says also steps are very simple to track. There is a rapid growth of fitness tracking devices. It is such a clear communication tool for public health messaging. The major takeaway, they say, is that there's a lot of evidence suggesting that if you move even a little bit more, it's beneficial for you, particularly if you are doing very little activity otherwise. The more steps you take per day, the better it is for your health.
Yeah, you Patrick, tell us.
There you have it. I was always shooting for the 10,000 steps.
It's nice when you hit that 10,000 and the little fireworks go off and you're just like, all right, mm-hmm. I don't have to move for the rest of the day. And walking that extra 2,000 steps, it's got to be beneficial because when I'm walking, I'm not in the kitchen eating.
Well, yeah, that's true. I'm just looking back on my step counter. Some days are really, really good. Some days are eh. But I'm up in that range. I'm up in the, you know, the 6,000 to 8,000 range just about every single day. Not every day. But you know what? Here's another thing. I don't always have my phone on me. So I would probably need to add some steps just because the phone's not on me to measure it.
My Melanie, my wife, she wears the pedometer. And there's been times where we're going for a walk. She's like, oh, I forgot my watch. And I'm like, you know, the steps still count on your, you know, like real life steps count. Like it doesn't have to be some little gadget that tells you, hey, you made it. Just walking is good enough.
But there's something neat to see.
There's something about
it. You know, 8,386 steps in one day. That's a nice feeling.
Yeah, it is.
Also, before we go to the phones, the number again, 888-914-9149. Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, has introduced a measure as of yesterday that would eliminate Dr. Anthony Fauci. Well, it wouldn't eliminate Dr. Anthony Fauci, but it would eliminate his position as the head of the director of National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. I'm just waiting for you to play it, Cyrus. I'm trying to give you some space.
You do not know what you are talking about.
I tried to give you some space, and you didn't play it.
I like that you knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming. And I wouldn't be offended if you played it again. But just let me get through this. Senator Paul's amendment, designed to take central power away from the head of the organization, would divide the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases into three distinct research facilities. Paul's amendment would reorganize the NIAID by breaking it down into three separate national institutes, all with their own director, including the National Institute of Allergic Diseases, the National Institute of Infectious Diseases, and the National Institute of Immunologic Diseases. Another important issue the amendment addresses, Paul says, was the fact that it removes sole power and discretion from enacting public policy from the hands of just one person. Senator Paul says, we've learned a lot over the past 2 years, but one lesson in particular is that no one person should be deemed dictator in chief. Adding, no one person should have unilateral authority to make decisions for millions of Americans. This will create accountability, he says, and oversight into taxpayer-funded positions such as this one that has largely abused its power and has been responsible for many failures and misinformation during the COVID-19 pandemic. He explained the need for his amendment in a piece that he published, saying no one person should have this sole authority. The biggest lesson we have learned is that no one person should have unchecked power. So that's happening. It might work. We'll see.
You do not know what you are talking about.
You should check in with Rand Paul, Dr. Fauci. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Chris in Wilmington, Delaware. By the way, we had a phone call who was waiting to get on the air, and he just hung up right as I was about to go to him. That's how it happens. Let's go to Chris in Wilmington, Delaware. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about cremation. And my husband and I have been married for, it'll be 29 years in May, but we were both married and widowed. I was widowed in 1990 and he was widowed in 93. Our spouses were buried in the same Catholic cemetery 35 years apart. After we got together, we realized how close and all. And we each had, like when I buried my first husband, I had a plot with him. And then when Michael buried his first wife, he had a plot with her. So, I mean, over the years with the kids and all, so then, like, last year we got talking about it and we thought, what are we going to do with our kids as far as where they're going to bury us? We decided to bring the Rob and Kathy together, our former spouses, and then we would be buried. So all four of us would be buried together. The problem, though, at the cemetery is that there's a lot of rock. And they told us that they cannot dig down far enough that they can put two coffins on top of one another. So we have no choice, but my husband, Michael, and I have to be cremated. So it wasn't, it was, and we were really, you know, not happy about it. And our kids weren't happy about it, but it's kind of is what it is. And because it was too expensive to move both bodies to a whole nother site in the cemetery. It's a very rocky cemetery. So anyway, that's what I was calling about as far as the cremation, you know, with that. But it wasn't our choice. It was kind of out of necessity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can imagine that economic factors, they definitely impinge upon a decision like this. I were in your situation, Chris, I would keep seeking some other alternative. There may not be one, but I'd keep trying. I'd keep looking. Is this entire seminary? Is this entire cemetery plagued with the problem of rock near the surface?
Yes, and they said that there was one other section, but it was so. They said that might work where they could move all four of us. But the problem is it was very, very expensive. I mean, it was expensive to do what we did. We sold Michael's, those two plots to move Kathy over to where my husband is. And so we just, you know, but they said that where if we wanted another plot, it was possible, but they couldn't guarantee that didn't have rock. And it's an old Catholic cemetery. The other thing about it is it's not too far from us. There's one more Catholic cemetery, but it's about 5 or maybe about 8 miles away. And so this one is more convenient. And a lot of our family are buried in this cemetery. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you've got a few, if any, choices. So I wish you well in this, Chris. And if it were me, I would keep trying to find another way around it, but obviously you have the freedom to do it as you wish. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Very interesting story. Let's go to Ron now in Walworth, Wisconsin. Hi, Ron.
Hi. So yeah, I watched a video with with Trump and Osteen and Rick Warren and Duplantis, Copeland. They were all praising the Catholic Church and the Pope. lavishing praise on the Pope, oh, this great man of God, and the Catholics built America. And I just wondered, what does that tell you about the Catholic Church when you got these phonies on TV all building it up like that? You know, and something's wrong.
I mean, what does it tell you?
It tells me the whole religious system is fake. I would start from the bottom, read the Bible, and just go to Corinthians, where it says we're saved by grace through faith plus nothing in faith in Jesus Christ. You know, because the whole, if you ever watched Osteen or Rick Warren, or all they do is beg for money. You know, it's
so
all.
So what's your real question, Ron? What's the real question you want to talk about?
Well, they call him the Holy Father too. Is he holier than you and me? Does he not use the thunder bucket every morning just like we do? I mean,
so what's your real question?
The real question is, if you died today, where would you spend eternity? Because these guys are leading us astray, all of them, Catholic and Protestant.
Mm-hmm. I'd go to heaven, Ron. What about you?
I'm going to heaven by grace through the blood of Jesus Christ, but I'm not trusting in no baptism or religious system or a holy father that's not holy.
Oh, gee, then you're on the wrong train, Ron, because if you're not trusting what Jesus said about things like that, Jesus said in John chapter 3, unless a man is born of water and the Holy Spirit, he will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So if you're not willing to accept the teachings of Jesus, you know, why he says to me, why do you say to me, Lord, Lord, but do not do the things I command you? It sounds like there's a lot you don't understand about the Bible, Ron. So I'm sorry about that. But if you ever want to talk about any of the specific issues, do give me a call. I'm here for you. Thank you. Let's go to Scott in Jacksonville now. Hi, Scott.
Patrick, good morning. Hey, thanks for taking my call this morning.
Sure.
I'll get my question out as quick as possible here. I converted 2014. Wife and I have been married 35 years. And our oldest son, been married for 10 years. He and I kind of came to a head. His wife is just like I was as a much younger man. Used to be never physically abusive with my wife. Mm-hmm. Said some things I never had any business saying. And now he's married a wife that was just like me in my young years. My faith is on fire now, and I'm just challenged with how to deal with my daughter-in-law.
Well, this sounds like a very vexing issue. What kind of specific things are you seeing that are causing some heartburn?
I would say the way she talks to him sometimes. I know that she loves him. I know that she loves our grandchildren, but I'm struggling with the way that he talks to her. And so now I have a challenge with my relationship with her. It's difficult for me to even talk to her. Our son grew up Catholic, went through all of his sacraments. They now go to a Baptist church. I'm very happy that they're going to church. We pray that he comes back to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. But she directs everything in his life.
Okay. Now, first of all, I can imagine, Scott, that if you see the pattern in their marriage that you saw in your own marriage and you wish you hadn't done the things you did, that's valid, and I could understand why you'd feel that way. But in the case of their marriage, even if by your estimation or mine, it looks like it would be a miserable situation, if your son is willing to live that way, and this is the arrangement that the two of them have come to, do you really think that you're in a situation where you should try to fix that beyond giving?
Oh, no. No, as a matter of fact, I've made it a point not to offer any advice, with the way that she speaks to him, the way that they rear their children. They love their children. We had our opportunity, my wife and I, been married 35 years, to bring up our children. So unless they're doing something that's unsafe to the children, which they're not, you know, we're going to let them parent their children. So I am absolutely not trying to change him in any way. Uh-huh. But I just, my communication with her is just, it's the biggest challenge in my life.
So what is that like? In other words, does she roll her eyes when you speak? Does she not? Does she avoid you? Or is there like an open clash when the two of you are together?
Yeah, kind of rolls her eyes every once in a while. I should say throws out a pointed barb. So I kind of try to do my best to, not ignore react it. To that.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying not to do is have them cut us off from the grandchildren.
Oh, I know. That would be so painful. Well, how long have they been married, and how long has she been in your family?
They've been married 10 years, and okay. I think they're dating for about 2 to 3 years prior to that.
So she's known you for a stretch of time. It's not like she's just getting to know you.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, without my knowing anything else other than what you're mentioning, I can first of all imagine how taxing it must be on you. But for what it's worth, especially because of the possibility of having your grandchildren become pawns in this, I would grin and bear it as best you can and just offer it up to the Lord. And maybe, Lord, I offer you these feelings of irritation as expiation for the ways in which I was a jerk when I was a young man, and to... to do reparation for the times when I was not a good husband. That would be very meritorious, and especially because this is not a penance of your own choosing. This is something that you have to deal with and grin and bear it. I think that could be a very meritorious thing, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if over time your daughter-in-law came to really love you and appreciate you in a way that she doesn't now.
Well, Patrick, I certainly appreciate that, and something that I pray for often, and will continue to pray for. So, I greatly appreciate your time this morning. Thanks to you and
You're
Cyrus,
welcome.
My wife and I listen to you guys often, and thank you so much for what you guys do.
Thank you. Well, that means a lot, and thank you, Scott, for that. Hang in there. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets better as time goes on. I'll pray for that. Thanks, Scott. I'll be right back.
I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when. But we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values, and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Now that's what I call a taco.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Taco Town!
Happy Taco Tuesday. My number is 888-914-9149. It wouldn't be right if we didn't talk about Russia for just a few moments. First of all, did you see the video of an employee on Russia's state TV called Channel One? She interrupted a news program last night. She walked in, kind of behind the anchor woman, and she was holding a homemade sign that said in Russian, "Stop the war, no to war, don't believe the propaganda, they're lying to you here." A bit of it was in English, "Russians against the war." The news anchor continued to read from her teleprompter, speaking louder in an attempt to drown out the woman who was standing behind her. Her name, by the way, is Marina Ovsyannikova. She's an editor on the Channel One network. They quickly switched to some, footage so as not to have her in the picture. And she said she had pre-recorded a video before she went on the air and did this. And she said, "Regrettably, for a number of years, I worked for Channel One and worked on Kremlin propaganda. I'm very ashamed of this right now, ashamed that I was allowed to tell lies from the television screen, ashamed that I allowed the zombification of the Russian people. We were silent in 2014 when this was just beginning. We did not go out to protest when the Kremlin poisoned opposition leader Alexei Navalny." She said, "We are just silently watching this anti-human regime, and now the whole world has turned away from us, and the next 10 generations won't be able to clean themselves from the shame of this fratricidal war. What's happening in Ukraine is a crime, and Russia is the aggressor," she said. "The responsibility of this aggression lies on the shoulders of only one person, Vladimir Putin." And she urged her fellow Russians to join anti-war protests in order to bring an end to the conflict. And she's now missing. So she was apprehended. She didn't get far. She was apprehended. And as of this morning, nobody knows where she is. I mean, she's in police custody, but even her lawyers are not allowed to talk to her, according to reports this morning. Also, this is having all kinds of repercussions. And in the world of the church, or churches, I should say, it is breaking like this. The Russian Orthodox Church in Holland, in Amsterdam, has announced that they are breaking communion with the Russian Orthodox Church. A statement from the website in Holland said the clergy unanimously announced that it is no longer possible for them to function within the Moscow Patriarchate and provide a spiritually safe haven for our faithful. This decision is extremely painful and difficult for all concerned. The head of the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill, who also sits as an ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin, has not condemned the Kremlin's actions. Instead, he referred to those in Ukraine as evil forces. So the Netherlands-based church, which is connected to the Russian Orthodox Church, has broken communion with the Russian Orthodox Church. We're going to see more of that, I believe. Also, there's a crazy story in Asian news about witches. I'll just read it to you. An invocation of Alyona Polin, Russia's leading witch and founder of the Great Witches of Russia Association, which I wonder what their meetings are like, who held a general council of witches in support of Vladimir Putin a few days ago, said, "Those who hear but do not hear, those who see but do not see, those who are there, were there and will be there, will not forget my word." And she was leading an incantation to try to strengthen and prop up Vladimir Putin. 100 or so witches dedicated to the magical arts. They were dressed in witch outfits, gathered in Moscow to express their solidarity with Putin. Well, that makes sense. I mean, if you're dabbling with the occult and you think you like the devil, why not attach yourself to something that everybody recognizes as wrong? Let the great strength of Russia manifest itself, she was repeating hypnotically, trying to get her curses distributed. And I won't read what the curses were. So you've got 100 of these witches gathered together. No mention of cauldrons, but they're out there doing what they can, trying to curse the enemies of Vladimir Putin. We'll see how that turns out for them. 888-914-9149. Stay far away from that nonsense. Stay far away from it. Have nothing to do with anything of the occult, and you'll be happy. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Adiselli in Los Angeles. Hello, Adiselli. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. I've heard you talk about forgiveness, and, you know, I'm having a hard time trying to communicate mm-hmm. with what I'm trying to say, but okay. People that have committed suicide, I'm sorry, it's a difficult subject. I've heard you say how at the last minute they can be forgiven,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's true, yeah.
And what if somebody's been evil all their lives? I have a hard time accepting that. Somebody that's just been bad.
Mm-hmm.
On their last breath, they can still ask for forgiveness and be accepted into heaven.
Yeah. I know. It's amazing how generous God is with us. We don't deserve it, do we? And God is so generous and so loving that even somebody like that, who's led a terrible, wicked life, if at the very end accepts God's forgiveness and grace and is sorry for his sins, even he can be received into heaven. I mean, it tells us just how much God loves us. Now, are you concerned about the fairness issue? Is that part of what you're wondering about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I guess that's it. Because somebody like Hitler, who's obviously done nothing but atrocities, what if he mm-hmm. went through the same last minute conversion. And I hear a lot of people, well, he's going to go to hell. But do we really know?
Well, we don't know. I think it would be a safe bet to assume he did, but we don't know for sure. You know, so it's not a foregone conclusion, but I think if you consider his life and the fact that he committed suicide at the very end, anything's possible. But it's the story that Jesus told in the Gospels. You know the story where a man who owns a vineyard, he hires some people to work at the very early morning hours, and he says, I'll pay you X dollars to work in the field, work in the vineyard all day, and they go and they work. And then later, maybe about 10 in the morning, he hires some more people, and then at noon, he hires more people, and all the way till just maybe shortly before quitting time, he hires more people. And those last few, they hardly do any work at all because there's no time left. They go into the vineyard and they work a little bit, and then when they all come out, he pays them all the same amount. And the people in the morning shift, the people who started and were backbreaking, doing the backbreaking work all day in the hot sun, they get paid the same amount that somebody who came in and spent 15 minutes at the end of the day working. And they're indignant. It's not fair. Why are you paying that guy the same thing you're paying me? I worked all day. He didn't work hardly 15 minutes, and you're paying him the same amount that I'm getting paid. And what does the master say? He says, well, hey, first of all, it's my money, and I'll pay people what I want. And didn't you agree to work for this wage? So I'm paying you what I promised you I'd pay you, but what does it matter to you if somebody else gets paid the same amount that you do? That's my business. Now, I'm not saying that to you, Araceli, you know, to be rude or anything like that. But Jesus actually dealt with this question. Why is it that some people who lead wicked lives, and at the very end, they repent and are saved? Maybe they have to spend a lot of time in purgatory, but they're saved. And what about the person who was faithful his whole life or her whole life and really loved the Lord and sacrificed and all the other things that go with it? You know, is it really fair that the person who led a wicked life gets to heaven too? And the issue is, it's not about fairness. It's about God's mercy. And he will have mercy on all of us if we're willing to accept it, you know. You know what I mean?
I do. Thank you. I guess it's kind of difficult to explain that to people. Mm-hmm. I guess as humans, we obviously want everybody to get what they have coming to them, I guess. But God is
That's true.
Bigger, more forgiving than us as humans. So mm-hmm. I guess.
Well, you know, justice means that you get what you deserve. Mercy means you don't get what you deserve. And you and I don't deserve heaven. God is merciful. You know, so even we are the beneficiaries of his mercy. And so if he has mercy on us, we should rejoice that he's having mercy on those who maybe are very far away from him. I think.
You're right. Thank you, Patrick. You always know how to answer everything. Have a great day.
Thank you. I don't know if my wife would agree with that, but I do appreciate the sentiment. Thank you for that. And with that, we will take a pause, catch our breath, and come back and do it some more for the next hour. We have another hour ahead of us, and you're welcome to call in and be part of the experience. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's see. I think we've got how many lines open? We have two lines open at least. And you can grab one. 888-914-9149. Yeah, somebody just grab that one. There's another one. Grab it now. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.